Thank you.
Jack Holloway's not here, but I checked in with him to make sure I could talk about him in my sermon. You might know he's leading an Advent study on Wednesday nights focused on one particular trajectory of liberation theology that runs from Paul Tillich to Marcella Althaus Reed. It seems particularly appropriate to focus on liberation theology, a revolutionary influence during the season of Advent. I've never done this before, but I'm quoting Marx in my sermon because of the Marx influence on liberation theology and its revolutionary character. In his famous thesis on Feuerbach, Marx writes, "The philosophers have only interpreted the world in various ways. The point, however, is to change it." During Advent, I've been doing my own reading, trying to push myself in some new directions of thought about changing the world, knowing that every impulse in our hyper-capitalist co-option of Christmas wants to lull me into merrily shopping till I drop, with nary a care about a critical take on the season, let alone this city that gave the world Santa Baby and all his little toys for all good girls and boys. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I'm reading a book that helps me open up the utopian character of these Isaiah texts that we're reading through the season of Advent. It's a queer theory book called Cruising Utopia by Jose Esteban Munoz. And in the chapter I'm reading, he draws on two notions that I think are really interesting and maybe helpful. One is the term no longer conscious, a term that tries to describe the work that the past does or can do even as a forgotten memory. And the other is the not quite conscious, a term gesturing to the realm of potentiality, what isn't but may yet come to be. His point in using these terms is that quite radical aspects of the past can be, if not lost, then at least not present to mind. These things can then become the not quite conscious. To make his point, he shares his take on the mainstreaming corporate effect on queer politics, more or less aligned with the status quo. And then he references a manifesto of 16 demands published in 1971 in the gay liberation journal, Gay Flames, by a group calling itself Third World Gay Revolution. He quotes the final demand in their manifesto in full. 16, we want a new society, a revolutionary socialist society. We want liberation of humanity, free food, free shelter, free clothing, free transportation, free healthcare, free utilities, free education, free art for all. We want a society where the needs of the people come first. We believe that all people should share the labor and products of society according to each's needs and abilities, regardless of race, sex, age, or sexual preference. We believe the land, technology, and the means of production belongs to the people and must be shared by the people collectively for the liberation of all. His point is that organizing and activism can become pragmatic, aiming for inclusion within a deeply unjust present, rather than reaching for something utopian, like a new society, a goal that works as a fundamental critique of the present as terribly inadequate at best. When this radical memory is pulled from the realm of the no longer conscious, it can function in a fresh way as a slap in the face of complacency. It can then be reasserted as the not quite conscious space of potentiality, a vision that things could be radically different. This is, I think, what is at stake in the church's wisdom of turning to the prophet Isaiah during Advent. The radical utopian vision of a new society is in fact not just pie in the sky, but the vision of God for this world, God's promise for all creation. As we start the new liturgical year, we're forced to ask ourselves if we've let the true radicality of God's call to become the no, if we've let the true radicality of God's call to become the no longer conscious of our life, caught up as we are in everyday concerns of management of our lives and the life of this congregation. In this particular passage is of special importance, connecting back to God's instructions to Moses and the people of Israel on how to organize their society post-slavery in Egypt. Isaiah declares the declaration of the year of Jubilee, a utopian critique of the present, if I've ever heard one. It is exactly this that Isaiah was sent to declare to the poor, the brokenhearted, the captives, all who suffered. There we hear about the year of Jubilee, which Isaiah is pointing back to through the prophets to Leviticus 25, where in a 50th year, after seven cycles of 7 years, there's a great redistribution of wealth. Like with the manna in the wilderness, so with this Jubilee. All have enough. None are starving, none are hoarding. This passage from Isaiah also points forward to Luke's gospel. It is this very passage that Jesus looks for when he's handed the scroll in the synagogue in Nazareth. He looks for this passage, finds it, and reads it as he preaches his first sermon. To return to Jack as I close, we did a sermon series on the book of Revelation some years ago, and there was a particular section of Revelation 5 that I think Jack preached on. In that section, there's a scroll with seven seals. A mighty angel asks, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and break the seals?" The narrator weeps bitterly because no one is worthy. Jack's point was to say, by virtue of being alive in our time, we are all caught in the clutches of the capitalist machine, and none of us is pure. Only the Lamb in that chapter of Revelation is able to unseal the scroll. Friends, we live in a city in which mentally ill homeless people live on the streets and are now subject to harassment and institutionalization against their will. While at the same time, Robert Lauder, the billionaire cosmetics heir, evades taxes by donating his own art collection to his own art museum on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. This is possible because of politics and laws that govern our broken society. The work of the Spirit of the Lord, Isaiah tells us, is not just to change tax laws to disallow harassment, to change laws to disallow harassment of the most marginal, or to change tax regulations for this trickery of the super rich. No, the work of the Spirit of the Lord is meant to renew in us the desire for a new society, for a social order that is truly good news to the brokenhearted of every sort. For the Spirit of the Lord is not just on Isaiah or Jesus, but on us too. We then are also bearers of this night, not quite conscious utopian vision that can guide our critique, yes, and also our construction of the world we want to live in. It belongs here. It begins here at St. Lydia's, where we practice remembering who we are, and we receive in meal and story the shape of a world God desires for us to live in. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's, and I invite us to hold deep silence. And then when you hear me ring the bell, you're invited to share your stories or experiences sparked by the text or by my reflections on it. We share stories at St. Lydia's and not opinions, as Jesus shared stories so that we can know each other more deeply. And we invite respectful holding of each other's stories, not praising or critiquing them, but just appreciating what each person brings to the space. We begin in silence.